Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anne Ball, Phil Dierking, and Susan Shand. Later, Ashley and Anna Mateo will bring us this week's education report. But first, India has begun using a new trade route to Afghanistan. India sent its first shipment of wheat to Afghanistan by way of the Iranian port of Chabahar. The shipment will not pass through Pakistan, which lies directly between the two countries. The Pakistani government refuses to let India transport goods to Afghanistan through Pakistani territory. The new sea route is an important step in expanding trade between India and Afghanistan. Indian officials described the first shipment as a landmark moment. India plans to send six more shipments, representing 1.1 million tons of wheat, in the coming months. They will be sent from the port of Kandla in western India to Chabahar. From there, they will be taken by road to the Afghan capital, Kabul. The shipment comes days after a top United States official, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, visited New Delhi. He spoke about President Donald Trump's decision to decertify the international nuclear agreement with Iran. Tillerson attempted to ease concerns that U.S. officials could stop India's plans to develop the Iranian port. Easier connectivity to Afghanistan is necessary for India to increase its economic links with Afghanistan and countries in Central Asia. The port of Chabahar is the centerpiece of an effort to improve trade in the area. India is investing $500 million to develop ports and new transport centers, as well as connecting road and railroad lines. Indian leaders expressed hope about the project. Sushma Swaraj is India's foreign minister. She called the new trade link the starting point of an effort that would lead to the unrestricted flow of trade throughout South Asia. Prime Minister Narendra Modi wrote on Twitter that the launch of the trade route marks a new chapter in regional cooperation and connectivity. The sea route through the Iranian port is the second step taken by India to increase connectivity with Afghanistan. In June, India opened an air freight route to provide more Afghan goods for the Indian market. The Chabahar project was proposed almost 15 years ago, but plans were delayed for years because of U.S.-led actions to punish Iran for its nuclear activities. The easing of those sanctions led India to sign an agreement with Iran and Afghanistan last year to develop the port. The shortest and most cost-effective land routes between India and Afghanistan lie through Pakistan. But a long rivalry between the two countries has prevented India from sending exports through Pakistani territory. Afghanistan is only permitted to send a limited amount of goods to India through Pakistan.
Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission says President Uhuru Kenyatta has been reelected. The commission says 98% of Kenyans who marked ballots in the presidential election last week voted for Kenyatta. He received 7.4 million votes. 6 weeks ago, Kenya's Supreme Court canceled Kenyatta's victory in elections held in August. The court ruled that the commission did not follow the Constitution and law. It ordered a new vote. About 80% of registered voters marked ballots in the August elections, but only 38% voted last Thursday. Opposition leader Raila Odinga withdrew as a presidential candidate about a month ago. He said the commission was not ready for a repeat vote, and he urged his supporters not to vote in the election. Odinga comes from Kisumu in western Kenya. Many people there support him. Eric Otieno says he cannot accept the result of the repeat election.
I'm just seeing disaster in this country because you cannot tell anyone that way forward we have had elections and so we have a president. To me, we don't have a validly elected president. Recognizing Uhuru as a president, my president, no way.
Many people in the area where Kenyatta was born and in the Rift Valley voted for the governing Jubilee Party. The Rift Valley is home to Deputy President William Ruto. The Electoral Commission canceled the vote in four counties for security reasons. The four are Kisumu, Homa Bay, Siaya, and Migori. Opposition supporters have been protesting in some parts of the country. They are calling for electoral reforms. Some political observers question the legitimacy of the latest election because 12 million registered voters did not mark ballots. Kamisa Kamara is one such expert. She works for Partners Global, an organization that works for peaceful and democratic change.
Odinga did boycott the election as well as most of his supporters. So only one third of registered voters actually went to vote in the rerun. So I think that will pose a great question and a great challenge for the legitimacy of President Uhuru Kenyatta.
On Tuesday, Odinga made his first public comments since Kenyatta was declared the winner. He described the vote last week as a sham election that must not be allowed to stand. Odinga announced the creation of what he called a People's Assembly, through which the opposition would exercise the solemn duty of restoring democracy, constitutionalism, and the rule of law. Chris Hennemeyer follows politics in Africa. He says Kenyatta will have to change the way he talks about his victory if he is to be able to govern his divided country.
Now it's up to him to decide whether he wants to sound like a conciliatory leader who's attempting to bring Kenyans together, or whether that's not the road he chooses to go on. And from his initial remarks today, it does not sound like he's willing to speak to Raila to try and find some common ground and to move the country forward.
Chris Hennemeyer says he does not believe the election will stop Kenya from playing an important role in East Africa.
He understands that business must go on. So I don't see Kenya turning into any kind of failed state or dysfunctional country.
John Tomaszewski is with the International Republican Institute, an organization that works to spread democracy. He was in Kenya during the elections. He says this has been a difficult time for the country.
We've seen a very tough election cycle, and I think what's happened today is just one more step in a process that won't end today. I think while the Jubilee government would like to move on, the NASA coalition is dug in, and I think we'll continue to see more and more of this discussion in the weeks ahead.
Kenyan business and religious leaders have called for calm. At least 9 people have died from election-related violence since Thursday. I'm Ann Ball.
China and a group of countries in Southeast Asia are likely to talk briefly about a territorial dispute when their leaders meet next month. But some observers say the discussions will be without language that would anger the Chinese government. Chinese officials will meet with the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations from November 10th through 14th. In Manila. The Philippines, an ally of China for the past year, will be chairing the meetings. ASEAN gatherings usually aim to strengthen general agreement, not publicize differences. Observers expect statements from the meetings to note this dispute over sovereignty in the South China Sea without blaming any country. Oh E Sun teaches international studies at Singapore Nanyang University. He expects the dispute to be noted at the ASEAN talks, but with very general language, urging all sides to act responsibly. China claims more than 90% of the 3.5 million square kilometer South China Sea. Since 2010, China has expanded its coast guard and military presence in the waterway, which is valued for its oil and fisheries. This expansion has angered 4 ASEAN members. Parts of the sea are also claimed by Brunei, Malaysia, Vietnam, and the Philippines. The talks in Manila may be peaceful, because China and ASEAN may be close to an agreement. Foreign ministers from the two sides agreed in August to language that would avoid sovereignty issues and work to avoid accidents at sea. The agreement, called a code of conduct, has been stopped for 5 years, largely because China didn't like it. Then China's occupation of a shoal in 2012 caused the Philippines to bring the territorial dispute to a World Arbitration Court. In July 2016, the court agreed with the Philippines. Since then, China has sought stronger relationships with ASEAN countries by making economic agreements. ASEAN and China are expected to begin expanding the language of the Code of Conduct next year. Usually, China avoids negotiating with groups of countries because such discussions lessen China's power. ASEAN countries are home to 630 million people. Many of these nations receive support from the United States military. China wishes to call the Code of Conduct talks discussions to avoid the more formal word negotiations, said Carl Thayer, emeritus professor at the University of New South Wales. The Chinese government also put a condition that gives it a right to leave the talks, he noted. China may be urging ASEAN not to let the United States or any powerful country get involved in the dispute while the talks continue, Thayer said. But observers say ASEAN and China must recognize the deep sea dispute during the meetings in Manila. ASEAN always discusses the South China Sea, Thayer noted. They want progress, he said. Vietnam and the Philippines had already softened their position toward China since the World Court ruling, said Nathan Liu, international affairs professor at Ming Chuan University in Taiwan. Last year, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte made a friendly visit to Beijing. He received Chinese promises of $24 billion in development-related aid. I'm Susan Shand.
Saudi Arabia has announced it will sell shares of its planned $500 billion megacity on financial markets. The city, called NEOM, is a 26,500 square kilometer zone that will stretch into Jordan and Egypt. Saudi Arabia is also selling shares of its national oil company, Saudi Aramco. Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman made the announcement during the Future Investment Initiative conference in Riyadh. The prince told the Reuters news agency that the move is part of the country's push to invest its economy in industries other than oil. Prince Mohammed explained that the name NEOM comes from combining neo, meaning new, with M, the first letter of the Arabic word for future. The 32-year-old prince is next in line to be king of Saudi Arabia, the largest Arab economy and an absolute monarchy. The NEOM zone will be located next to the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aqaba, near trade routes that use the Suez Canal. The zone will serve as a gateway to the future King Salman Bridge, which will link Egypt and Saudi Arabia. NEOM will be owned by Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund, or PIF, until the selling of shares begins. The PIF has said it hopes that NEOM will bring investments from companies in renewable energy, biotechnology, manufacturing, and entertainment. Prince Mohammed said NEOM would not be listed in the markets until the idea is mature enough. It might be after 2030, it might be before, but the idea and the strategy is to float it eventually, he said. Prince Mohammed said the city could select a board of directors and government. NEOM's leaders' only responsibility would be to increase economic activity. In New York, the governor is appointed to meet certain needs, including growth. But in NEOM, the governor doesn't have to deal with any of those problems, he said. NEOM is part of the Crown Prince's plan called Vision 2030. Its aim is to reform the economy of Saudi Arabia and provide more jobs for the country's large population of young people. The idea is not to restructure the economy as much as to seize the opportunities available that we didn't address before, Prince Mohammed said. The kingdom's growth has slowed since the price of oil fell in 2014. Some fear the Saudi economy may shrink again this year. Saudi Arabia follows Sharia law, which is based on a strict interpretation of Islam. However, NEOM will not follow those rules. Instead, it will offer residents a more liberal lifestyle, permitting such things as musical performances and entertainment. Saudi Arabia has started relaxing some of its long-standing rules. It recently permitted women to drive cars. Prince Mohammed calls these reforms important for economic survival. Prince Mohammed became next in line for the throne in June after the king, his father, removed a more senior prince from the line of succession. The prince has promised to transform Saudi Arabia economically and socially. I'm Phil Dierking.
Here's what's trending today. Martin Luther and his 95 Theses were trending on Google Tuesday. It is a strange place to find Luther, who lived 500 years ago in what is now Germany. He was a Roman Catholic religious worker who became a professor of theology. Luther disagreed with some of the Catholic Church's teachings. He especially disliked the custom of selling indulgences. It enabled wealthy people to pay the church to free themselves of their sins. In other words, clergy could clear them of any wrongdoing or violation of Catholic teachings. On October 31st, in the year 1517, Luther reportedly left his 95 Theses on the door of the castle church in the town of Wittenberg. His writings disputed the Catholic Church's power over believers. He said that one's trust in God, not actions, would lead to salvation. Luther wrote, "Why does not the Pope, whose wealth today is greater than the wealth of the richest Crassus, build the Basilica of St. Peter with his own money, rather than with the money of poor believers?" Some historians question whether Luther actually did nail his theses to the door of the church. But all agree that his writings spread with the help of the printing press. His theses became a kind of 16th century trending topic across Central Europe. The Pope condemned them as conflicting with the Church's teachings. The incident launched what became known as Reformation and led to the Protestant movement to break away from the Catholic Church. On the 500th anniversary of Luther's act of resistance, members of German youth organizations nailed their own theses to the doors of 300 churches around Berlin. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and others attended a religious service at Castle Church in Wittenberg. And October 31st, Reformation Day, was a public holiday in all of Germany. And that is what's trending. I'm Jill Robbins.
At the start of the school year, Alina Pogosian could not wait to tell her friends about the most interesting thing she had done over the summer. The 16-year-old did not want to talk about a trip she took somewhere. She wanted to talk about a paid internship that she had at a biology laboratory at Montgomery College in Maryland. The internship was made possible by the RISE program, which gives real job experience to high school students in Montgomery County. A lot of the materials and machinery we used is not given at most high schools, Pogosian said. She added, I got to learn a lot at the same time I was able to have a lot of fun. And I met some new people.
Jennifer Sangbush is the instructional lab coordinator who worked with Pogosian. She said her first task is to teach the high schoolers about safety rules to avoid injury. She said, we also went through working with chemicals, making solutions, doing calculations. Then we progressed into doing more complicated things, such as measuring protein concentrations and doing DNA tests. The internship was not just about tests in the laboratory. There also was training in how to take care of animals, such as snakes and tortoises, kept in the lab. More than 400 students from Montgomery County's 25 high schools took part in the RISE program. RISE stands for Real Interesting Summer Experience. The experiences may be at construction companies, police stations, marketing companies, fire stations, and other places. More than 140 businesses, government agencies, and nonprofit organizations hosted students for paid internships.
Will Jawando, a local activist, is the program's director. He says RISE has two main goals. The first goal is to expose our students to career opportunities early on so they can inform their education or training after high school. The second goal is improving the local economy.
We said there's 30,000 middle skill level jobs here in Montgomery County that are not filled. So how do we also expose them to that there's jobs here in the county that they could be doing in a year or two that pay well and are on career track?
He said the program does not only benefit the students. It can also help the county and the region. If students involved in the program stay in the area after graduating from high school, they can become productive citizens. The program received some support from the Montgomery County Council. Councilman Craig Rice helped provide some of the money. Rice said that while government often pays attention to immediate needs like roads and building, the RISE program provides for future generations. He said spending money on young people is a way to show that government is serious about being competitive in the world.
Sangbush said RISE gave her the chance to work with high school students who might apply to Montgomery College. She described the students as curious and eager to learn. She said high schoolers might be more inquisitive than college students. She said the high school students really ask a lot of great questions. Pogosian, she said, was engaged and always on time. She noted that she was surprised to learn that the 16-year-old arrived an hour early just to make sure she would be on time, saying, I just didn't want to be late. Organizers say the RISE program had a successful summer in 2017. They want to expand the program next year. They also hope that other counties in the area will offer similar, real, interesting summer experiences for their students.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.